I've never really planned to do anything. I never planned to be a DJ, I never planned to be a filmmaker, I never planned to write comedy. It all just sort of like naturally happened.
Hello, I'm Renee Vaughan Sutherland, and welcome to Greater Than 11%, a weekly podcast that explores roles and opportunities within the creative industries, with the aim of contributing to increasing diversity across the board, in addition to promoting some awesome women.
For episode 60, we're joined by filmmaker Kate Jessop. The term filmmaker in this case is a catch-all phrase, as her roles are many. She writes, produces, directs, illustrates, and animates. And she also teaches part-time at the School of Media, which is part of the University of Brighton. A creative output stretch for promos for organisations such as the Citizens Economic Council, trailers for theatres and film festivals, through to creating and directing her own web series and experimental films. Her films have screened nationally and internationally, at Raindance, The Best of Bird's Eye View, and the London International Animation Festival, to name only a few. She was also included in the 2019 Berlinale Talent Lab, and she has won numerous awards for her work, from scriptwriting through to her animation style. Kate's work feels tactile, collage in style. She has stated that she takes her inspiration from Peter Blake and the Dada movement. It draws you in. There is an overwhelming desire to step inside the film because it reaches beyond the surface and creates a sense of place. Her films are born from her own direct experiences and what is happening culturally and politically at any given time, activated through a socially observant lens, often resulting in animations that are a form of activism, but with what I think is fair to say, a surrealist edge. One of my personal favourites is Queer Heroes. Securing a grant, she collaborated with 13 other UK-based animators to create a short film that celebrates historical and queer figures that have helped push forward arts, politics, or science. It is beautiful and fleeting, and is something to be watched and savoured several times over. Then there is her hilarious and sharply observant web series, Tales from Pussy Willow, a satirical sketch set somewhere in Britain that lands a queer feminist perspective. 3-minute-ish episodes use an animation style that is absurd as much as it is alluring. The series has won a heap of awards, Best Comedy and Best LGBTQ Series at the London Short Series Festival, Best Animation Award for the Worldwide Women's Film Festival, and a London Short Film Award for the episode Smile. Tales from Pussy Willow will no doubt go on to win a heap more awards, as it possesses the qualities that will propel it into a category of must-see, and quite quickly freefall into cultish viewing. Currently retired as a web series for the time being, Kate is focusing on developing 20-minute episodes to turn it into a broadcast series. Kate has made many more incredible films. We will share her website in the show notes so you can explore these visual delights for yourself. Kate, what a joy to welcome you to Greater Than 11%.
Thank you. What a lovely introduction.
Well, it's all your work. It's amazing. I wonder if we can kick off with you telling me and focusing on what it is like an animator filmmaker does.
So I'm a filmmaker and I utilise the process of animation, which is a frame-by-frame process. I'm a 2D animator and I work, as you said, in a digital collage style. And I use my animation for narrative shorts, but also documentary and artist film.
And can you talk about how you developed this style? Because it's a very particular style. And when you see it, once you've seen one and then you see the next one, you know it's your style. It's Kate Jessop film.
Yeah, as you said in the intro, quite a few people have said that my style is quite tactile. I think my style developed from actually not studying digital animation to begin with. So I went to art school in the late 90s and I studied illustration. So I did a lot of printmaking. I did do some frame-by-frame hand-drawn animation then, but it was only until I was in Manchester and I was part of the club scene that I started to work with club visuals and basically just explored and experimented with digital video. And I think that's how my style established itself, really. So I do think that I'm sort of bilingual, as it were, in regards to traditional media and digital media. So I now work in After Effects, I work with Creative Suite, so I obviously work digitally, but I still really like having like textures. So I've got screen prints that I made in Manchester like 15 years ago that I still scan in and I use as a track mat in After Effects. So I think I'm sort of like halfway between traditional and digital.
What was that transition or that kind of pull to move into more animation as a way, kind of moving away from printmaking and fine art?
I just think animation is the most ultimate medium, basically. So it incorporates design, it incorporates rhythm, it's temporal, it also incorporates narrative. If you would like to have narrative, obviously it can be used for documentary. But I was just really inspired by, at the time, I mean, lots of filmmakers, but at the time I was really inspired by Michel Gondry. He was directing a lot of music videos at that time. Like, a lot of the Bjork videos are very surreal. And Jonathan Hodgson, I remember seeing his work, who now, weirdly, I'm in programs with. So it's kind of like really strange when you end up in the same animation programs as the people that inspired you to begin with. Yeah, and it was, I just really loved music videos. I really loved club visuals, and that's kind of like how I got into working with Moving Image. It wasn't until I started thinking about narrative, which was like much later on. Like, to begin with, it was just purely abstract.
Which is kind of a nice segue into, what was that kind of process of leaving university, and what was your career kind of history and trajectory leading up to now?
Oh, well, I don't know. It's kind of a long time. I don't know how much you want to know. So I was doing quite a lot of editorial illustration, which I still love. So I was doing that. And then I basically was playing in lots of shit bands in Manchester, and I was friends with lots of bands. And I got asked to do some music videos. And that was just kind of how I started getting into Moving Image, through doing club visuals. So I used to DJ, so as part of the club nights, I would start to do my own visuals. And so that's kind of how I started working in Moving Image. I then got my work seen by Ra Page, who runs Comma Press, and he was setting up a whole branch of his publishing company called Comma Film to do lots of poetry adaptations. So I started working with him, but I didn't actually make my first narrative film until I was about 26. But that first film that I made, Desires, that got shortlisted for the Virgin Media Shorts Award, which was like the first ever national award. I think there was like, I don't know, 12 films out of thousands that got chosen. I then got a distribution deal with Shorts International for it. And then it got picked up for the best of women in film and TV. And I got flew out to Canada. So that film just absolutely took off. And remember, this was before like social media and Vimeo and everything. So that's when I first went to a film festival. I think I was about 27 when I went to my first film festival. And actually, it was Bird's Eye View that picked it up, and they toured it internationally. And that's when I thought, oh, this is what I want to do. Because I'd been kind of playing in shit bands for years in Manchester. And I think it just sort of like reached its natural conclusion. You know, sometimes when like you're in a relationship and then it's it kind of like gets to the end, and it's only when like a new person comes in, you're like, oh yeah, that was kind of dying. I think that was kind of like between me and my love of music. So then I became a filmmaker, and to be honest, it's never anything I actually planned to do. But I've never really planned to do anything. I never planned to be a DJ. I never planned to be a filmmaker. I never planned to write comedy. It all just sort of like naturally happened. So basically, I've never really had a plan. It all just happens kind of like organically for me. So I started making films with Ra, and then I moved to London about 10 years ago. I only actually started writing comedy a few years ago. So I only actually started writing when I was about 35. So, and at that point, I had some friends, when I used to go back up to Manchester, I had some friends that would kind of like say to me, you're like a natural comedian, you should like write things down, and in terms of like when you recall your anecdotes. So a lot of my early comedy was actually about the Manchester music scene. So in series one of Pussy Willow, there's the Muso Boys, which are like these reoccurring characters in the pub, and then like Muso Girl, who like hangs out with them, who's loosely based on me. So I didn't actually take my comedy seriously when I first started writing it. I didn't. And I still feel like a bit of a fraud. I know in your intro, you described me as a writer. I still feel like a bit of a fraud when I'm described as a writer, because I never actually trained in writing. I actually trained in illustration. And I think I can only actually write sketch comedy. I can either write sketch comedy or like really serious academic papers. I don't seem to be able to write anything else. And also I type with two fingers as well, so I can't actually type. In fact, all of my Pussy Willow scripts are handwritten in notepads, which I then type up into Celtics afterwards, or Celtics.
Mm-hmm. But that's still writing.
I know it's still writing, but
I love that you like, I type with two fingers, so that doesn't make me a writer.
I think I've just got imposter syndrome. I mean, like my producer, who I've I started working with this last year, she always describes me as a writer director. And this is kind of, I don't know, I guess it's like a new identity that I'm sort of like coming to terms with. Because, yeah, I mean, I guess I was always an artist for years and I was a musician. And now I'm a filmmaker and I'm a writer. So I guess I've been like lots of things, really. So I don't know. I guess I need to sort of work through this in my head that you don't need to have like trained in something to be able to like be good at it. And I think maybe my comedy writing, it's so visceral. I think the fact that I've never really learned about like structure and things like that, that maybe that's why it sort of reaches people so much.
First things first, I'm going to say that, you know, everything is like an evolution, especially for creative people. They find their kind of, I don't know, it's like water finding its level often. You know, you kind of bounce from one thing to the next and then suddenly you kind of like, oh, I'm doing this. And it just doesn't feel natural because it's this weird notion that you haven't trained in it or you've come to it later in life or whatever, which I think's a really interesting notion. But the second element that I'm really curious to know is, so you went to university to study illustration. Had you always like wanted to focus on being an illustrator? Or was it something that you just came upon?
I used to absolutely love drawing. I was just obsessed with drawing like all of my childhood, basically. So, but what was kind of sad slash weird for me is studying illustration kills drawing for me, actually. And it's taken years for me to like get it back. So it's really interesting that I finished kind of, yeah, it sort of killed my love of drawing, unfortunately. So I think that that's also potentially partly the reason I got into more kind of digital video. So a lot of the club visuals that I was doing was quite sort of experimental video based. I've literally only this past sort of year or two started to go to life drawing classes again. But also then, in terms of options of what you could study, I mean, I was at art school in the late 90s, and then we didn't really have degrees. We didn't really have animation degrees or kind of like digital media degrees, so it was very traditional. So it's interesting that lots of animators that I meet, a lot of the time they did study like graphic design or illustration. I think almost sometimes like studying something can take away the kind of joy or purity a little bit, actually. Some of the most interesting filmmakers that I've met didn't study it, so they either studied photography or they studied I don't know, art direction, or I think sometimes filmmakers who didn't study like structure or codes and conventions, etc., they have like a different kind of approach. So yeah, I guess it's similar with music. Like people who can't read music sometimes compose some of the best songs.
Okay, so can you talk about how you channel your creativity and use it as a form of activism? Because that comes through in, you know, I would say nearly all your work. There's some element of kind of the political or social or cultural commentary. And is that something that's evolved or has that always been there?
I've had it said to me that my animation is like activism. I've only started to think about it in the past few years. So, and now I've started to consciously think about it and how I can use it as direct activism. So I've literally written a paper on animation as activism, which I presented at Goldsmiths and a couple of different animation conferences this last year. So I've literally written a paper on it. But yeah, I think a lot of my films, stuff like Little Elephant and Chariot Riders, which were the Love Works duology that I did with Bobby Tawana, they were kind of early pioneers of the queer animation genre. I don't know if queer animation is just a genre that I've just invented, but at that time, I mean, Little Elephant, I think it got into about 100 film festivals. And what was really nice at the time is I remember being at a screening in Italy, and there was a young queer girl who came up to me afterwards and she said, watching this film is really, with my mum, has really helped open up the conversation with her, and like, thank you for making it, which was really nice. But as well, I think because it's based in British Asian culture, which was Bobby's intention because he's part of that community, it was kind of one of the first sort of like QTPOC films as well to explore those kind of themes. Bobby ended up taking it out to academic conferences as well as within the film festival circuit. So the films have been used as like a talking point. But yeah, I mean, in terms of in my writing as well, I mean, I always say that I'm holding a mirror up to society in regards to the kind of things that I write about. I mean, Pussy Willow is basically the female lens, it's the queer lens, but it's also a lot about privilege as well. So it's a lot about class. So I grew up in 80s Northern England during Thatcher's Britain, during the Section 28 era. So there's kind of like nothing like growing up in that kind of culture to sort of like make you think about your background and your culture and how that's affected things. I think especially when I moved to London, actually, about 10 years ago, and I started to kind of, I don't know, sort of like look around me. So when I was living in Dalston, I remember everyone was kind of like minting about in like drinking turmeric lattes. And whereas in East Manchester, where I used to live, my friends with kids were really struggling because there was like the library got shut down, the swimming pool, the Sherstatt Centre, the youth club. So there's some real, like up north, there's some real, like austerity has really affected people up north a lot and a lot of my friends in a way that I think we are sometimes in a bit of a bubble in London. Obviously, I'm sure there's struggles in London as well, but I've kind of not seen it as much as when I go back up north. That kind of influences me as well. You know, sort of like never forget where you're from, really. And just to say with Pussy Willow as well, part of my motivation of that is I wasn't seeing my life depicted online. I wasn't seeing my life on screen. So I didn't really see the queer experience depicted in a humorous way. I think in queer film, there's a lot of misery, like people coming to terms with their sexuality and it's a struggle. I mean, Parents Chat is obviously a bit of a difficult watch at times, but I kind of wanted to make it humorous. And I really love sitting in a cinema with an audience for that and hearing people just like roaring with laughter at that. So I kind of wanted to work with humour as well as, I guess, an awareness raising device as well. Because I think if you can make somebody laugh, then on some level, you're making them think about the kind of issues that you're putting forward. It's the same with Smile, which is where she gets catcalled and then the builders end up being feminist allies. That's the one that won at LSFF this year. I think if like men can laugh at this as well and like men can understand about how it's funny that these builders end up being feminist allies, I think it can help them to sort of think about feminism as well. Because I think it's the same with feminist film. I think feminist film can be very like earnest, maybe not that engaging. And again, I think if you can use humour to make people laugh, I think they process things on a different level and they're more likely to think about the kind of message that you're trying to put forward.
So Pussy Willow, you made two series of those and you just mentioned Parents Chat and Smile, which is two episodes. Mm-hmm. So maybe you can tell us a little bit more about the series, the structure, one as well, how you made it, because that's quite interesting.
Yeah.
And then like its exciting new potential of where it's going to kind of launch to.
So it started off as a web series. So Pussy Willow was kind of an experiment, to be honest. So as I said, I didn't really start writing until I was about 35. I just started writing things down in notebooks. And then one day I just decided to type it up and send it to some friends. And actually Anna Maguire, who's been one of the kind of like main stars of Pussy Willow, she's in Parents Chat, she's in most of them. She was one of the first people I sent it to. So I met Anna at a film festival. So all the people I work with, it's all like collaborators that I know from film festivals. So Anna was one of the first people, just the first few people that I sent the scripts to were like, this is hilarious, you need to make it. And I was like, okay. So I was teaching part-time at a university at the time, and they have green screen studio. So in the summer when all the students have left, I just hired it out for a day. My friend is a DP, so basically like nobody's ever been paid for Pussy Willow. I do it all on no budget. The only time there's ever been any kind of budget involved was when I did the crowdfunder for Queerer Than Now. We shoot it all in one day. So I shoot the actors' heads to the front and also at the side. And then afterwards, I key out the green screen and I composite them onto animated bodies. So there's quite a lot of design involved, quite a lot of asset design of the bodies and the different hairdos. The first series, I didn't discover the green swim cap. So you'll see on quite a lot of the kind of Instagram stuff, that a lot of the behind the scene videos, you'll see like Anna and Payvand wearing a green swim cap. So I only actually discovered that or kind of thought about that for the second batch of screenings. So the green swim cap basically enables me to key out their head and composite different hairdos onto them. So the first series was an absolute bugger in order for sort of like keying out the hair. So with Parents Chat, obviously, we all got their normal hair. So I made the first series, which was 2 to 3 minute episodes, and there were 7 episodes. But to be honest, I didn't really take it that seriously, stupidly, because I made Queer Heroes the same summer, and Queer Heroes was an Arts Council-funded film. I was kind of touting that out more. So, I mean, Queer Heroes did really well. It was nominated for the McLaren Award at Edinburgh Film Festival, the Animation Award. But I don't know. I think because I had to write up a report for the Arts Council, I kind of took that one more seriously and touted it out. So I just kind of put it on the internet. I didn't actually start sending it out to film festivals until about a year later. And as soon as I did, it's just, it just won so many awards, it just absolutely took off. And I was like, oh, I should have done this before. So then a year later, I made series two, which was 6 times 2 to 3 minute episodes. And then it was selected for the Berlinale Talent Lab. So the Berlinale Talent Lab is the talent lab section of the Berlinale Film Festival. So they pick 10 projects that they choose to develop, which was absolutely amazing. It was just such, it's just like one of the most inspiring experiences that I've had. So my mentor was a script editor of God's Own Country, and she really helped me with the structure. So what was really interesting is that she said to me, I can't help you with the comedy writing. That's absolutely your own voice. And I can't really give you any guidance on that, but I can really help you to structure it. And that's what she did. And that's when I started to develop it into 20-minute episodes. So around about the same time, so it was about a year ago, Joe Lewis saw it, who's a British comedy TV producer. I've now signed what's called a shopping contract. So I'll be making it with Hipster Films. So what we've done is we've written a treatment, and yeah, I've got a bunch of 20-minute episodes. So they're all written and they're all ready to be made, basically. So it's developed quite a lot. I mean, I think the first writing, so the first kind of series, inverted commas, it was quite personal. So stuff like Parents Chat, a lot of that are literally lines that have been said by either my parents, friend's parents, or ex's parents. I mean, that was almost like documentary. The second batch of writing was more kind of cultural commentary, so stuff like Smile, stuff like catcalling. I've got like so many more characters that I've started to write now. I'd say I've started to go a little bit more surreal and a little bit more commenting on class, privilege, British society, because we're all obsessed with class in Britain.
So at the moment, people can't see Pussy Willow because there's a bit of an embargo while you are getting ready to launch the next longer version.
Yes. What you can do is you can email me and I can send you some private links. So this happens a lot. I get lots of people emailing me. So I'm absolutely happy to share the private links of previous episodes. So there are 13 episodes. I usually just share the 4 most popular ones, the ones that have won awards. But you can absolutely watch the previous stuff if you email me. We've retired it as a web series to basically kind of like restructure it and kind of like rebrand it and sort of like tout it out with a different structure.
Okay, awesome. So we'll put all your details in the show notes so people can get in touch if they're like absolutely burning to see this amazing animation and series. I'm wondering if we can talk about where your inspiration comes from. So you kind of touched upon your experiences and your kind of also kind of historical creative journey. But where do your ideas and styles kind of originate from?
I think I've got quite a broad range of influences from different types of media. This might sound a bit random, but actually Jarvis Cocker is quite a big influence on me. I remember seeing the Common People music video when I was, I don't know how old I was, it was sometime in the 90s, and it really spoke to me, his writing about going to St. Martin's College and meeting people who basically, it's all about, I want to be common like you. And the writing on that, I think, is so astute, because when I moved to London, I kind of had a similar kind of experience of when you go to film festivals, there's lots of people who talk to you about like, I'm taking some time out to write my feature and that kind of thing. There's a lot of people of privilege that are involved in filmmaking and I guess creative industries as a whole. And I think Jarvis Cocker, his writing, he's so astute and it's a real kind of like northern lens. So I know he's a songwriter, but actually his writing, I think, really influenced me. There's a lot of comedy writers as well, like Carolina Hearn, who obviously passed away a couple of years ago. But Carolina Hearn, I think at the time, that was the only time I'd seen a northern woman and her take on the world in the Fast Show. And obviously she went on to do Mrs. Merton afterwards. So I think she was a really big influence on me. And then in terms of contemporary influences, I actually love a lot of what's coming out of America right now. I think in terms of the UK, I don't think the UK has particularly been that inspiring the past sort of 10 years, to be honest. Obviously, we've got Fleabag, which everybody goes nuts about, which has sort of been exported out to different countries. But in terms of adult animation, we haven't had any adult animation since the 90s, when Channel 4 used to commission a lot of late-night adult animation or short films. So the last TV series that we had in the UK that was either directed by a woman or that was in the adult animation genre was Crabs and Villas by Sarah Ann Kennedy. So Sarah Ann Kennedy is now a voice actor for Peppa Pig, weirdly. But you can see it on Channel 4OD. She wrote Crabs and Villas, which at the time it was so progressive. It was set in a block in London and it had like interracial relationships, it had same-sex relationships, it had like a woman, she like had sex the first time and it was really shit and like disappointing. And like one of the kids, he like took some E and then he like had a bad one. At the time, it's just kind of like the everyday experiences that I guess I was going through as a teenager, really, or that lots of young people go through. But it was so kind of groundbreaking. And I actually don't think the UK has produced anything like that since. There's been a real drought of adult animation since that. I mean, obviously, it would do really well for, like, kids' TV. So actually, I'd say a lot of my recent influences are from America. I love BoJack Horseman. I love Tuca and Bertie. I think a lot of the adult animation that's being produced from America right now, it's so spot on in terms of cultural commentary. I love how BoJack Horseman comments on stuff like gun crime in America, about feminism, about toxic relationships, about addiction. But also as well, I mean, I know this is live action, but I find Broad City absolutely hilarious. And I find those two women so inspiring about the fact that they also started off as a web series. I mean, they're like the classic model, really. Put it on the internet, it got picked up by Comedy Central. I find them really inspiring as well. And I love the episode where she realises that she hasn't been able to come since Trump became president and she can't kind of like work it out. I mean, obviously it's really absurd, but I think it's so true in terms of the kind of anxiety that young women must feel within Trump's America right now. Because I think we have a similar thing in the UK in terms of how things have started to go quite right wing. I mean, I think it's similar like all over the world, really. But I think there's a real anxiety at the moment from lots of people from different kind of minorities, like people of colour, women, trans people, the LGBTQ community. I think we all have a bit of a common anxiety at the moment. And I think it's just really... I don't know, it's just really commented on in a really intelligent and humorous way in that series.
Oh yeah, I love Broad City.
Yeah.
They are hilarious. Yes. So much so that you don't even laugh sometimes. You're just like, that is brilliant.
Thematically, again, I know this might sound a little bit random, I'm actually really influenced by feminist sci-fi. So I really love Octavia Butler. I really love, like, one of my favourite books is Woman on the Edge of Time. So with feminist sci-fi, I love the way that they take these kind of, again, it's cultural commentary. They kind of push it to a more kind of futuristic sci-fi kind of level, but it's still commenting on what's happening at the moment in society. So I've started to bring a little bit of a sci-fi edge into Pussy Willow. So one of my characters, the Mansplainer, is now the time-travelling mansplainer. And what he does is he travels through time and he mansplains pivotal women's in history's achievements to them. So I think that's a bit of a nod to feminist sci-fi as well. So in terms of literature, that's one of my influences. And in terms of design and animation, it's kind of the influences that you said in your introduction, really. I love collage, I love Peter Blake, I love Dada, I love surrealism with Michel Gondry. What was interesting when I was at Fringe Film Festival, it was Muffin, who's one of the queer film programmers on Flare and on Fringe. She introduced Pussy Willow as being very Dada, and I thought that was quite spot on of her, actually, in terms of the animation style. It's very collage, so I work with live action. It's like cutout style, and it's a little bit punk as well in terms of its aesthetic. I'd say all of those have influences on me as well.
I wonder if we can go back to something you have mentioned a few times in relation to class and privilege, and that comment about, you know, you go to a festival and someone be like, I'm taking a year out to write my feature or whatever. You know, you have often found the resources to be able to create despite lack of financial support to make. And I wonder how that comes into play with your work as well, and the drive that to keep going, to keep making despite lack of access to that kind of financial support.
Yeah, I mean, there's been no funding for animation in the UK for about 15 years now. There's just been the BFI fund that just got released this year. But before that, there was Arts Council for Non-Narrative Work, like i.e. Queer Heroes. So that's been quite a major obstacle. But yeah, I don't know. I got asked this actually in a Q&A. I think it was Underwire this year. My question was like, Kate, how are you so prolific? And part of that is kind of like, I don't really know. I just kind of shit it out, as it were. Sorry, that's really crude. But I just kind of can't help it. It just sort of like all comes out. I sort of like need to do it, I guess. Yeah, like going back to sort of like class and privilege. If I think about where I'm from, like my ancestors used to do 12-hour days down the mill. So actually making animation, it's kind of like no hardship in that respect that, you know, I can just like sit down and it's warm and I'm inside. And I can work for 12 hours if I want, but I don't have to. If I think about, you know, where my family have come from, being like farmers, living in a house with no central heating, doing 12-hour days on a mill, it's actually, yeah, it's kind of no, it's no hardship to me to make animation that I love on no budget. But in terms of bringing people together, I always tell my students this, just don't be an arsehole. Just be nice and be the kind of person that people want to work with and want to have around, really. And just be good to people.
Can I ask you, is there a typical day for you?
It depends what I'm working on. So I teach 2 days a week. So that means that I'm not in London. What I try and do if I'm working on a project is I try and follow a particular kind of structure working on the concept of contrast. So I actually don't do 12-hour days, like straight through for animation. It's a little bit like in music when you have like the quiet section, the loud section, the verse, the chorus, etc. Or in design, contrasting colours. Actually, the pauses are really important because I find that if I work like 12 hours straight on an animation, I start making mistakes, I end up hating it, I just get like a really bad achy neck. So I actually will do something like go for a swim first thing, actually, just to sort of blow away the cobwebs, I guess. So I do stuff like swimming, I do quite a lot of meditation. So I guess it's just general admin, sort of replying to emails, what do I need to do? There's sort of like pre-production, or I might be writing a treatment. So there's a lot of writing involved as well, being a filmmaker. But in terms of production, I mean, animation's so labor intensive. I just kind of get into the zone and I sort of like do particular scenes that are structured, but I do make a point of also leaving the house. So that's why being part of community is important as well. So it's what I love about London. There's so much community in terms of animation, in terms of queer film. So I make a point of going out and being part of the community as well and connecting with other animators and connecting with other filmmakers and just showing up for people, really. Because if you don't show up for people, then how can you expect people to show up for you?
That's a great motto. I'm a big believer in that as well. Which makes it a bit harder as it's darker and colder. I have to really push myself out sometimes. Do you think that's something you've developed over time, especially for someone who also works in a studio a lot of time by herself? I go through phases where I'm just working nonstop and then I'm like, I realise, oh my God, I haven't had a break. And then other days when you really have to shape and nurture the day. Or have you got into a really good rhythm?
I think every day is different. I think it just totally depends on what I'm working on. Yeah.
So can you talk about what skills you need to be an animator filmmaker?
It's what I love about the medium, the fact that it just incorporates so many different disciplines. So I'd say design skills, drawing skills, also having a sense of rhythm as well, having a sense of timing, but also just actually the soft skills involved in creative industries. So the soft skills that aren't just particularly to do with the discipline as such, but just stuff, I know I tell my students this, but just like answer your emails and just be reliable and be that kind of person that people want to work with as well. Don't be rude. Don't be an arsehole. Deliver what you say you'll deliver. If your render is going to take 4 hours, don't say I'll send it to you in 10 minutes. I can't bear it when people say that to me. Just be straight. Just say it as it is. So just be honest, deliver, be polite, be nice to people.
And how does your teaching cross over with your practice as a filmmaker? Do they influence each other?
Actually, young people can be very inspiring, actually. And in fact, some young people sometimes influence me in terms of they introduce me to things which I'd never seen before. And then hopefully vice versa as well. I mean, young people can be hilarious. I taught this class a couple of weeks ago and I taught this really complicated how to rig up a character session, and then at the end I was like, any questions? And they were like, what shoe size are you? And I was like, I'm shoe size 5. And they were like, do you have a whole range of metallic footwear in your wardrobe? And I was like, yes. So they were like more interested in like my fashion sense.
So can you tell me what's been one of the biggest challenges you've faced in your career?
As discussed, there's been like an absolute drought of funding for animation in the UK the last sort of like 15 years or so. So and it really, and it's so interesting with context, it really sometimes gets highlighted to you when you go somewhere else. When I was at Berlinale, I just realised that in Germany, in France and in Canada, those artists, those filmmakers are so well supported, much more than in the UK. So this German filmmaker, I think she had like 30,000 euros to make a 5-minute animation. I mean, there's just absolutely nothing like that at all in the UK. So it's, yeah, I think that's been like quite a major barrier, actually. It just made me realise how unsupported I'd felt by the UK. And just stuff like there's no funding as well for animated features apart from children's animation, such as Shaun the Sheep, which is made by Aardman. So for example, the Flare Mentorship Scheme, which is for queer filmmakers, part of their criteria is you must have a feature in the pipeline, but actually for animation filmmakers, there is no funding to make a feature. Mm-hmm. So I'm always kind of disincluded from that for being an animation filmmaker as opposed to a live action filmmaker. Because I think with the BFI, they really kind of emphasize or fetishize almost live action drama. I think that there's a really big sort of like push for that because I guess it makes them money, but they're not really interested in the kind of like Michel Gondry films as much.
Yeah, the more experimental, less box office sales or that.
Yeah, yeah, as much as they are in Europe or Canada, mm-hmm. I guess. But also as well, I mean, this isn't really like a barrier as such, but I mean, just stuff like going to film festivals, it can be quite annoying still, even now. When I turn up, people always ask me if I'm an actress, and I'm like, no. I'm actually writing a Pussy Willow sketch about this. And then the next question is, are you a producer? And I'm like, no. And then I say, I'm a director. And then like, oh, okay. It's always like the third time that we get to it. So I was at a film festival a couple of years ago and I met this American guy. And yeah, he was like, are you an actress? I was like, no. He's like, are you a producer? No. And I was like, no, I'm a director. And he was like, oh, I like directors. And it's just like, oh, I know. Yeah.
Gross.
Yeah, yeah. But it's just that cliche of like women are always producers and men are always directors. So women are the nurturers and men are the geniuses. So women are never the ones that have the vision, whereas men are the ones that have the vision.
I've definitely experienced that. I have been often asked in relation, even on a shoot when I am clearly directing, the public have come up and they're saying, so what are you acting in? What is this film? And I'm like, directing this here?
Yeah. That's the one thing I've never done. I've never acted. I've been like comedy writer, illustrator, filmmaker. I've just, yeah, never acted. Yeah.
All right. So what do you love about being an animator/filmmaker?
It's a wonderful medium, but also it's a platform to discuss and portray difficult ideas that may otherwise not be quite so digestible in terms of live action cinema, for example. Like animated documentary, you can really explore different themes that just can't be represented through live action. And it's the same with a lot of adult animation comedy as well. So the kind of stuff that I explore in Pussy Willow with like feminism, with the queer lens, I think you can explore it in such a way that you can't through live action. So I recently made a documentary with King's College London with a researcher there. It was on feminist miners in Tajikistan. So it was basically about these women whose husbands had left them to go and work in Russia and not come back. And then they become coal miners because there's no other option to make money. And then they end up getting stigmatized for being a coal miner. So I've made some really beautiful kind of like stop motion, sort of like coal kind of sections for that. And in a way, I don't think you could have made the same film through live action. I think with animation, it just lends itself to kind of, I don't know, utilizing different techniques to portray quite difficult topics. But in terms of me as a filmmaker, as a person, I love getting free drinks at film festivals. I love like traveling the world and making new friends and just seeing lots of amazing work.
And how does that work on the film festival circuit? So if someone was interested in either animation or short film or whatever, how do they get to film festivals? How does that kind of system work?
You've got to send it off and then it might get accepted or it might not. Mm-hmm. So there's a bunch of different websites you can use. Film Festival Freeway, that's one of the more common ones now. It can sometimes get to a point where you just get requested. So with quite a lot of my films, I mean, Desires was getting requested, Queer Heroes was getting requested, Little Elephant. So I think if there's a particular genre that you're working in and you may perhaps be on the kind of like forefront of that genre, often you'll get requested. So Canada always pays a screening fee, which is lovely. So Canada are really good for that. Actually, Eastern Europe are really good for that as well. So in Eastern Europe, there's a really big tradition of animation. So Eastern Europe, Canada will often pay you screening fee. and fly you out. So yeah, it's just a mixture of sending out and then sometimes getting requested.
Okay, awesome. So can you talk about how you fuel your creativity? What you do, where you go, what you see?
I think I fuel my creativity by going to film festivals, meeting people, making new friends, seeing new work. Yeah.
Swimming, meditating.
Yeah.
Okay. So what have you got coming up in the next few weeks and months?
So we've got a screening at LSFF, which is London Short Film Festival. So Queerer Than Now is going to be screening in the festival. Check out my social media, Kate Jessup Film, and I'm sure I've put some sort of content on about it.
Okay, awesome. So we're at the end of the interview.
Yeah.
I have so loved chatting to you. It's been so fascinating because what I really love about your animation is it is so layered, like in the writing, in the presentation, in just the way that you kind of digest it. So it's been great learning more about Pussy Willow and what's to come. So before you go, something I ask everyone, is there a career or job in the creative industries you know a little about and you'd like to know more about, and then potentially I could get someone on the podcast in that role?
Yeah, a couple actually. Again, this might sound a little bit random. I always wanted to be a drummer and I feel like I was a bit of a frustrated drummer. I remember weirdly when I used to work in this cafe in Manchester, and I was collecting up trays, and one of the customers said to me, who I later realised was a songwriter for like Kylie and people like that, he said to me, "You're a frustrated drummer." And it's one of the most insightful things a stranger's ever said to me. So yeah, I don't know. I feel like I missed the boat and didn't become a drummer. But also in terms of art forms, I find choreography really interesting. But I think there's a real relationship between animation and dance. Animation's obviously based on rhythm. I mean, it has lots of relationships with like poetry as well, all the kind of mediums that are based on rhythm. But I've seen some absolutely wonderful animation dance films, or kind of like mixed media dance animation films. And I kind of think it's kind of similar in terms of the way it's structured. So when you learn like pose to pose animation, which is about working out the key poses of the character, it's kind of similar to working out like dance moves. So I've always been really interested in choreography. I mean, it's nothing that I could ever do now. I'm like too old to like go and train to be a dancer. But it's always a medium that I'm quite interested in.
And finally, if I could ask you, is there a woman in the creative industries that you could recommend that I get in touch with to interview on Greater Than 11%?
There is lots of women that I could recommend. The one that I had in mind actually lives in America, Lisa Hannawalt. She's the comic book artist and character designer. She was a designer for lots of adult animation, such as Tuco and Bertie and BoJack Horseman. So I don't know how you'd be with getting in touch with her. She would probably be the artist that I would love to hear from the most.
Okay, it's been so lovely chatting to you. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Cool. Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed, please write a review and rate, as that helps other people find Greater Than 11%. Also, stay subscribed to keep up to date on the weekly releases.